page 342, section 19, the immaterial attainments, arupa vachara, jhanas. So far, we have finished the attainment of rupa vachara jhanas. So a yogi practices samatha meditation and he attains first, second, third, fourth, and fifth jhanas. Now he wants to attain the higher jhanas, that is the arupa vachara, immaterial jhanas. So in order to get the arupa vachara jhanas, first, what must he do? Now in the manual, we will read the manual. Next, one withdraws any kasina except the space kasina, and does the preliminary work by contemplating the space that remains as infinite. By doing so, one enters the first immaterial attainment. When one does the preliminary work by contemplating the first immaterial sphere consciousness as infinite, one enters the second immaterial attainment. When one does the preliminary work by contemplating the absence of the first immaterial sphere consciousness thus, there is nothing, one enters the third immaterial attainment. When one does the preliminary work by contemplating the third immaterial attainment thus, this is peaceful, this is sublime, one enters the fourth immaterial attainment. So this is a description of how a yogi attains four arupa vachara jhanas. It is very brief. But we should know more about the immaterial jhanas. So first, a person who wants to get the immaterial jhanas or arupa vachara jhanas must see danger in the physical body. There are people who think that because we have physical bodies, say we pick up sticks, weapons, and fight with each other, we have disputes and so on. And also, because we have the physical body, we suffer a lot. We suffer diseases and so on. So this person wants to avoid physical body. Now, when he gets to jhanas, even the rupa vachara jhanas, he transcends or he surmounts the physical body because the object of his jhanas is not the physical body, but the image of the material thing, image of the kasina. Although he has surpassed the physical body, he still does not like the kasina sign, the counterpart sign, right? The object of first, second, third, fourth, fifth jhanas is the counterpart sign. When he does not like the material body, he also does not like the counterpart sign, because counterpart sign is the image of the material thing. So he tries to surmount that patibhaga nimitta, that counterpart sign. In order to surmount that counterpart sign, what he must do is first, he must enter into the jhanas he has already attained. See, he entered into the fifth jhana. And then after that, he withdraws the casina, the counterpart sign of casina. That means, say, he enters into fifth jhana, and then emerging from the fifth jhana, he expands that sign to whatever size he wants. It may cover the whole universe, or it may cover smaller than that. So he must expand that sign as far as he likes, and then he must contemplate on the space touched by the counterpart sign, not on the counterpart sign itself. Well, that is the difference. Now, when he tries to get first, second, third, fourth, fifth jhana, he tries to concentrate on the counterpart sign. But now, he tries to concentrate on the space taken up by that counterpart sign. That means he stops paying attention to the counterpart sign. So, not paying attention to counterpart sign and paying attention to the space taken up by the counterpart sign is called withdrawing the casina. Casina here means not the real casina, but the sign of the casina, counterpart sign. So he must withdraw the counterpart sign. And when he withdraws the counterpart sign, he must take one of the nine casinas, except the space casina, because space casina cannot be removed or cannot be withdrawn, because it is space, and so it cannot be withdrawn. So except that there are nine casinas, so he must take any one of the nine casinas as an object, and the casina means the counterpart sign, and then he expands it, and then he stops paying attention to the counterpart sign, but instead he pays attention to the space taken up by the counterpart sign. So, and does the preliminary work by contemplating the space. And on that space, he must contemplate as infinite space, infinite space, infinite space many times. And then his the hindrances will be suppressed, and his mind becomes concentrated. And so he enters into the first immaterial attainment. That means he gets the first Arupa Vajra Jhana. So in order to get the first Arupa Vajra Jhana first, he must have this passion for rupa, for material things. And then, since he disliked the material things, he also disliked the casina object, because casina object is a counterpart of the material thing. And in this case, the Visuddhimagga gives the example. A person who is followed by or who is attacked by a snake. So he runs away, and then reach another place. Even after reaching another place, he sees a strip of palm leaf, or a rope, or even the crack of the earth. He thought it was a snake, and so he doesn't want to look at it. So in the same way, this yogi who hates rupa does not want to see anything connected with rupa, and the counterpart sign is connected with rupa. So he wants to remove it. He wants to discard it. And so when his meditation becomes successful, then he reaches the first Arupa Vajra Jhana. So the first Arupa Vajra Jhana takes what as object? That space, infinite space as object. And that infinite space is called the space obtained by removing the counterpart sign, or space taken up by the counterpart sign. Now, after getting the first jhana, he wants to go to the second jhana. Then he must find fault with first jhana, because it is close to fifth jhana. And the fifth jhana is close to happiness, sukha, and so on. And so it is not so good. And the second arubhavacara jhana is more peaceful. And so he gets dispassion towards the first arubhavacara jhana and thinks the second arubhavacara jhana as more peaceful. And so he contemplates towards that goal. When one does the preliminary work by contemplating the first immaterial sphere consciousness as infinite, so in that case, he takes the first arubhavacara chitta as the object of his meditation. And when he takes that, he says, consciousness, 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 or infinite consciousness, infinite consciousness. So he takes the first arubhavacara jhana as the object of his meditation and dwells upon it again and again and again. And then his mental hindrances subsided and he gains concentration. And so he gets the, or he enters the second arubhavacara jhana. So when arubhavacara jhana arises, it takes the first arubhavacara jhana citta as the object. So that is the second arubhavacara jhana. Again, he wants to go on. So he thinks that second arubhavacara jhana is close to first arubhavacara jhana, which is like an enemy. And third arubhavacara jhana is more peaceful. So he develops dispassion for the second arubhavacara jhana and say liking for the third arubhavacara jhana. Now this time he contemplates on the absence of the first arubhavacara jhana consciousness, because when he practices meditation, then the first arubhavacara jhana consciousness is already passed, already gone. So there is no first arubhavacara jhana, arubhavacara citta at that moment. And so he takes that absence of first arubhavacara citta as object. And then he must contemplate, there is nothing, there is nothing, there is nothing. Then one enters the third immaterial attainment. So he contemplates as there is nothing, there is nothing, there is nothing. And then he developed concentration and mental hindrances subsided. And then he enters the third arubhavacara jhana. The third arubhavacara jhana takes what as object? Absence of the first arubhavacara jhana as object. So that absence is not ultimate reality. So it is concept. In Pali it is called natthi bhava. Natthi bhava panyati. Absence concept. When one does the preliminary work by contemplating the third immaterial attainment thus, this is peaceful, this is sublime, one enters the fourth immaterial attainment. So after getting the third, he wants to go on to the fourth. Again, he must develop dispassion towards the third arubhavacara jhana and say, liking for the fourth arubhavacara jhana. And he thinks that fourth Arupa Vajrayana is more peaceful, and third Arupa Vajrayana is close to the second Arupa Vajrayana, which is its enemy, and so on. This time, he takes the third Arupa Vajrayana Chitta as an object, and then contemplates on it, saying, this is peaceful, this is sublime, this is peaceful, this is sublime. And then, when his mental hindrances subsided and he gets concentration, he enters the fourth Arupa Vajrayana. So when the fourth Arupa Vajrayana arises, it takes the third Arupa Vajrayana as an object. Because preliminary work also takes the third Arupa Vajrayana as object. So, in the Arupa Vajrayanas, there is no difference of jhana factors, but there is difference of objects. You may go back to the first chapter. Right? In the five Rupa Vajrayanas, or for the five Rupa Vajrayanas, the objects are the same. So they do not differ by way of objects, but they differ by way of jhana factors. The first jhana has five jhana factors and so on. But here, in Arupa Vajrayanas, the factors are always two, upekha and ekagata. So there is no difference of jhana factors. But here, the difference is of the objects. So, the object of first Arupa Vajrayana is infinite space. Of second jhana, first Arupa Vajrayana. Of third Arupa Vajrayana, absence of the first. And the fourth Arupa Vajrayana, the third. So, the first and the third take Panyati as object, right? Infinite space and nothingness. Second and fourth take Chaita as object, so ultimate reality as object. So by object, they differ. Now, you know the first one is called what? In Pali? Akasa Nancha Yetana. The second one, Vinyananja Yadana. Third one, Akinchanya Yadana. And fourth one, Nevasanya Nasanya Yadana. Now, with regard to the fourth one, we need to know some other things. Now, when the yogi practices meditation to get to the fourth Arupa Vajrayana, he takes the third Arupa Vajrayana as object, and then he says, this is peaceful, this is sublime, this is peaceful, this is sublime. So if he is saying, this is good, how can he surmount? How can he transcend the third Arupa Vajrayana? The answer is, also, he is saying, this is peaceful, this is sublime. He doesn't want it. He's just stating the fact that this is peaceful, this is sublime, but he doesn't want to get it. And a simile is given in Visuddhimagga. A king, they would go about the city, and he would see some craftsmen doing their crafts, like ivory, that they, what do you call them? Artists? They make things out of ivory? Ivory carver, yes. So he may see ivory carvers working with particles of ivory on their body and so on. But when he sees the things they have made, he would say, oh, this is very beautiful, this is very good, this is very beautiful. And they are very, how do you call that? They are very clever and the people. Although he may be praising the carvers, he himself does not want to become a carver. He just praises them and then he goes on. So in the same way, the yogi sees the third arupa vajra jhana cheta, and then he says, this is peaceful, this is sublime, because it is peaceful and sublime. But although he is praising the third arupa vajra cheta, he does not want it. He wants to transcend it and then get to the fourth jhana. And then, why does he take the third arupa vajra jhana as object if he does not want it? Because there is no other object to take. Again, a simile. Even though an attendant or a servant does not like the king, he has to serve the king because of his for his livelihood. So in the same way, even though he doesn't like the third arupa vajra cheta, he still has to be with it, or say to say praises of it. So even though an attendant may see faults in the king, he still has to follow the king. He still has to serve the king. In the same way, even though this person sees danger in the third arupa vajra jhana cheta, he still has to be with it, has to take it as an object and say, this is peaceful, this is sublime. And then the fourth arupa vajra jhana or cheta is called nivasanya nasanya. There are two meanings to this word, nivasanya nasanya. The jhana, having no sanya, nor, what shall I say, nor having no sanya. It does not have sanya, and it does not have not sanya. That means the sanya, actually not only sanya, all mental states in this jhana, they become so fine, so subtle, that it is almost non-existent. So we can say there is no sanya, no mental activity in this jhana. Although we can say there is no mental activity, almost no mental activity, still there is a very small amount of mental activity, very subtle sanya there. So, nivasanya na asanya. Nivasanya means not having sanya. Na asanya means not having sanya. So, it is called nivasanya nasanya. Another meaning is, here, sanya and other mental states are called nivasanya, nasanya. Because it is not, or let's say they are not sanya, and they are not sanya. There is a subtle difference. In the first meaning, they do not have sanya and they do not have not sanya. Here, they are not sanya and they are not sanya. That means, although there is sanya, it cannot function properly, it cannot function fully in this jhana. Now, sanya has two functions here. The first one is the usual making marks of the object. The second one is being able to cause dispassion when taken as an object of vipassana meditation. But here, they cannot be taken as the object of vipassana meditation. So, first, they are not full sanya. But there is still a very subtle sanya. So the function of sanya here is twofold: usual sanya and being able to produce dispassion when taken as the object of vipassana meditation. It is said that when people practice vipassana meditation, they cannot take the fourth arupa vajra jhana as an object and then try to see anicca, dukkha and anatta on it. It would be very difficult. Only those who have practiced the regular contemplation, beginning with the five aggregates and so on, may be able to take contemplate on this, the nevasanya nasanya, like the Venerable Sariputta. Even then, they can take just the group of the mental state and not one by one. So the fourth arupa vajrajana is called nivasanya nasanya, neither perception nor non-perception, because it's so subtle that it is almost no sanya. It is almost not sanya. But there is still sanya, a very subtle sanya remaining, so it is sanya, or it is not sanya. So it is nivasanya, nasanya. And here sanya is used to represent all mental states. So we can call it neva passa na passa, neva vedana na vedana, and so on. in the suttas, sanya is often used not as a mental factor sanya, but a name for mental properties or all mental things. So here also sanya means like that. So the fourth arupa vajra jhana is called nivasanya nasanya. And there are two similes to show how it is called nivasanya and nasanya, neither perception nor non-perception, right? The first one is what? A novice smears the bowl with oil, right? And then the teacher wants to put rice soup in the bowl and drink it. So when the teacher asked, give me the bowl, he said, there is oil in the bowl. Then the teacher thought that there is much oil in the bowl, and he said, then bring the bowl, I want to fill my oil too. Because in the olden days, monks carry oil tubes with them so that they can smear their feet after going a journey. So bring the bowl to me, I want to fill the oil tube. And then he said, the novice said, Bandi, there is no oil. The first, because there is very little oil on in the bowl, and it is not proper for monks to mix what was accepted before and what is accepted now, to mix and eat it. Since it is not proper for monks to do that, the novice said there is no oil. And then there is oil. And then when the teacher wants to fill his tube, he said there is no oil. That is one simile. The other is when both go on a journey, the novice sees water on some water on the road, and then he said, Bhante, there is water. Then the teacher said, then give me my bathrobe, I want to take bath. Then he said, Bhante, there is no water. First he said there is water because it may be enough to wet their feet. But then he said there is no water because there is not enough water to bathe. So in the same way, and there is almost no sanya, but there is still sanya. So it is called neither perception nor non-perception, neva sanya na sanya. And so the sanya here represent all mental activities. Okay, now next section. Ours is with the other 10 meditation subjects, when one does the preliminary work by taking the virtues of the Buddha, etc., as one's object, when that sign has been thoroughly acquired, one becomes concentrated upon it by means of preliminary development, and excess concentration is also accomplished. These 10 meditation subjects cannot lead to jhana attainment. So when you practice these, one of these, when one does the preliminary work by taking the virtues of the Buddha, so the preliminary work, you dwell on the virtues of the Buddha, Arahant, Sama, Sambuddha, and so on. When that sign has been thoroughly acquired, one becomes concentrated. So a yogi concentrates on the virtues of the Buddha again and again and again, and so his mind becomes concentrated. And then he attains excess concentration. But here we cannot say when the sign is parikaman, preliminary sign, when it is grasped sign, and when it is counterpart sign. Actually, there is no counterpart sign here. So we cannot even say when it is preliminary sign and when it is grasped sign. We can just say that while dwelling on the virtues of the Buddha, mind becomes concentrated, and the mental hindrances are subdued, then one is said to reach the excess concentration. So, practicing these 10 meditation subjects, one can attain only the excess concentration and not absorption concentration or not jhanas. So if you practice recollection of the Buddha's virtue, you can get only excess concentration. You cannot get jhana. Now come the direct knowledge, abhinyas, special knowledge, you can say, abhinya. Having emerged from the fifth jhana, taken as a basis for direct knowledge, having adverted to the resolution, etc., when one does the preliminary work, one enters into the fifth fine material sphere jhana, occurring by way of direct knowledge with respect to such objects as visible forms, etc. Now, when a person wants to get the direct knowledge of abhinya. Now he must practice meditation again. So having emerged from the fifth jhana, taken as a basis for direct knowledge. So if a person wants to get direct knowledge, first he enters into the fifth jhana as a basis. Having adverted to the resolution, etc., that means, let's say for example, a person wants to create 100 images of himself, like Chula Pantaka. So if he wants to do that, first he enters into the fifth jhana, and then gets out of that jhana, and then do the preliminary, adverting. That means, may I become 100%, may I become 100%, something like that. When one does a preliminary work, then one enters into the fifth fine material sphere. Then the fifth Rupa Vajra Jhana arises in him. But in that case, that Rupa Vajra Jhana is not ordinary Rupa Vajra fifth jhana, but it is called abhinya, direct knowledge. So direct knowledge or abhinya means fifth Rupa Vajra Jhana, but not ordinary fifth Rupa Vajra Jhana. It is especially developed fifth jhana. And the abhinya takes visible forms, etc., as objects. So abhinyas can take, some can take visible objects as objects, some can take audible objects as objects, and some can take many objects as objects. So how many steps do you see in this passage? First, he enters into the fifth jhana, and then, having adverted to the resolution, etc., when one does the preliminary work. So preliminary work is the second step. And then one enters into the fifth fine material sphere jhana, or abhinya, third step. So in the manual, we find three steps. Each step is actually one kind of thought process. So first, the basis jhana. Second, preliminary work. Preliminary work is manodwara viti. It is not jhana viti. And then abhinya viti, fifth jhana as abhinya. So there are three steps. The direct knowledges are fivefold. So here, abhinyas are given as five. The first one is supernormal powers. Second, divine ear. Third, knowledge of others' minds. Fourth, recollection of past lives. And fifth, the divine eye. So there are five abhinyas. Okay. Now let us read the kite. Having emerged from the fifth jhana, etc., the Visuddhimagga explains the procedure for exercising the direct knowledge thus. After accomplishing the preliminaries, he attains jhana as the basis for direct knowledge and emerges from it. That is first step, right? Basic jhana. Then, if he wants to become 100, he does the preliminary work thus, let me become 100. Second step. After which, he again attains jhana as the basis for direct knowledge. Another basic jhana. Then, he emerges from that jhana and resolves. Resolves here means he reaches abhinya. He becomes 100 simultaneously with the resolving consciousness. Resolving consciousness here means abhinya consciousness, fifth jhana consciousness. So here, how many steps do you see? Few. fifth jhana as a basis for direct knowledge. That is one step, right? And then, preliminary work, second step. And then, basis jhana again, third step. And then, abhinya, fourth step. So in Visuddhimagga, four steps are given, not three. Basis jhana, preliminary work, another basis jhana, and abhinya. So the basic jhanas are for strengthening the jhanas. But in the manual, only three are shown, right? Basis jhana, preliminary work, and then abhinya. So the second basic jhana is not mentioned in the manual. But it is given in Visuddhimagga. So the teacher said that it may be possible to get to abhinya without the second basis jhana. If a person is very adept at jhanas, he's very familiar with jhanas, then he may not need the second basis jhana. So four steps or three steps. Now the direct knowledges of Eightfold One supernormal powers include the ability to display multiple forms of one's body, like creating multiple forms. So Chulapantaka creates 100 images of himself. To appear and vanish at will. So you can appear and you can vanish as you wish. To pass through walls unhindered. So to dive in and out of the earth. You can dive into the earth and you can come out of the earth. To walk on water, to travel through the air, to touch and stroke the sun and moon. You are sitting here and then you can... You put your hand out and then you can touch the sun and moon. And to exercise mastery over the body as far as the Brahma world. So these are the supernormal powers that you can do if you get the first abhinya, which called supernormal powers. And the second abhinya is divine ear. Enables one to hear subtle and coarse sounds, both far and near. So if you have divine ear, you can hear sounds far away, subtle sounds or coarse sounds. So you can hear both sounds far and near. So you don't need telephones, radios or TVs. The divine ear. Number three, the knowledge of others' minds is the ability to read the thoughts of others and to know directly their states of mind. So you can get into their mind and know what they are thinking, what state of mind say they possess. So this is the ability to read the thoughts of others. And then number four is the recollection of past lives. It's the ability to know one's past births and to discover various details about those births. That is, how he was born there, in what clan he was born, how long he lived, what food or what things he make use of, and so on. So all details about the births. That is called a recollection of the past lives. And number five is the divine eye. It's the capacity for clairvoyance. That means to see, which enables one to see heavenly and earthly events. So you can see the heavenly beings, as well as earthly beings, heavenly events, earthly events, both far and near. So the divine eye is the ability to see heavenly and earthly events, far and both far and near. Included in the divine eye is the knowledge of the passing away and rebirth of beings. Chudupapatajnana, that is, direct perception of how beings pass away and re-arise in accordance with their karma. So this is included in the divine eye, or it is a variety of divine eye. First, a person practices divine eye, and then he sees beings passing away and being reborn. These kinds of direct knowledge are all mundane and are dependent on mastery over the fifth jhana. So if you do not get to the fifth jhana, you cannot get abhinyas. The text also mentioned a sixth direct knowledge. There is one more direct knowledge, one more abhinya, that is the sixth one. And this is the knowledge of the destruction of taints, asavakkhaya jnana, which is supramundane and arises through insight. So it arises through vipassana meditation. So we see here how many abhinyas? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and then chutupapatajnana, 6, asavakkhaya, 7. There is one more. That is called anagadamsa, seeing the future. Seeing the future is also included in the divine eye. So all in all, there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Yeah, 8 abhinyas. The 7 are mundane, and asavakkhaya jnana is supramundane. Sometimes we just say there are 5 abhinyas. Sometimes we say there are 6 abhinyas. So when we say 5, we mean the 5 mentioned here. When we mean 6, we mean these 5 plus asavakkhaya jnana, supramundane. Sometimes you may say there are 7 abhinyas. That means chudupapatajnana and anagadamsa jnana included in Dibha Chakhu, the divine eye. So, only when one gets the abhinya can one experience, or can one show miraculous happenings like multiple forms and so on. So, attainment of jhana, ordinary jhana, attainment of jhana alone cannot make one fly through the air and so on. Only when one gets abhinya can one fly through the air. Okay, these are the 5, 6, 7, 8 abhinyas. So this is the end of the samatha meditation. So in the samatha meditation, there are 3 signs, right? And then 3 developments, or 3 bhavanas. 3 signs are preliminary, grasped, or learning sign, and counterpart sign. And the three developments are preliminary, access, and absorption. So then what is the correspondence between these signs and developments? Preliminary sign corresponds with preliminary development. And then grasped sign corresponds with still preliminary development. And then counterpart sign corresponds with both excess and absorption concentration. Yeah. So the object of the excess and absorption concentration is the same, the counterpart sign. Okay, we go to Vipassana meditation. Now you all know the meaning of Vipassana. I have talked about it maybe hundreds of times. So, seeing in various ways, we and pasana. Pasana means seeing. Seeing means knowing. And we means various ways. And so seeing in various ways. And seeing in various ways means seeing mental and physical phenomena as impermanent, suffering, and not soul. First, the manual gives something like a table of contents. So in inside meditation, the compendium of purification is sevenfold. So the Vipassana meditation is described in seven stages of purification. The first one is purification of virtue or purification of sila. The second one is purification of mind. The third, purification of view. Four, purification by overcoming doubt. Five, purification by knowledge and vision as to what is the right path and what is not the right path. Six, purification by knowledge and vision of the way, that means of the practice. And seven, purification by knowledge and vision. So these are the seven stages of purification. And Vipassana will fit into this these seven stages of purity. And these seven stages of purity are to be attained in sequence. That means you cannot skip these purities. Say, if you do not have the first purity of virtue, you cannot get purity of mind. If you do not have purity of mind, you cannot get purity of view, and so on. So they are to be attained in sequence, say one after another. And the first purification, the purification of virtue or sila, is, say, it belongs to sila. And then purification of mind, the second one, belong to samadhi. And the last five belong to the wisdom aspect. So sila, samadhi, and panya. The first belongs to sila, the second belongs to samadhi, and the others belong to panya. So seven stages of purity. And then what next? The three characteristics. There are three characteristics: the characteristic of impermanence, the characteristic of suffering, and the characteristic of non-self. Now, the characteristic of impermanence is the mode of rise and fall and change. That is, reaching non-existence after having come to be. That means disappearing after arising. So there are two modes. We can say there are two modes. Rise and fall. Rise, fall, and change. This is one mode. And non-existence after arising is a second mode. But they mean the same thing, actually. So these are the characteristic means a mark. Say a mark of impermanence. So if you want to know something, whether something is impermanent, you must find these marks. And if you see these marks, you can say that this is impermanent. And that is, try to find out whether something arises and disappears. Or something has a beginning and an end. If anything has a beginning and an end, then you can say that that thing is impermanent. And after arising, things disappear. And so that disappearance after arising is also a mark of impermanence. When you practice Vipassana meditation, and you say you make mental notes of your thoughts, one thought comes, and you make a note of it, and then the thought disappears, there may be another thought, and then you make a mental note, and that disappears. And so you see your thoughts rise and fall, rise and fall, rise and fall, and so you know that and the thoughts are impermanent, or consciousness is impermanent. And say the sound of voice, you hear the sound of voice, and then it disappears, and then there's another voice or sound, and so on and so on. So you know that sound is impermanent, because it comes into being and it disappears. Or it does not exist after having come to be, after arising. So it disappears after arising. That is the mark of impermanence. The second is the mark of suffering. It's the mode of being continuously oppressed by rise and fall. So whenever we hear the word suffering, we just understand it to mean painful. But here, not necessarily painful, but being continuously oppressed by rise and fall. That is the mark of being dukkha. If you want to know whether something is dukkha or not, you have to see whether it is oppressed by arising and disappearing. That means whether it is impermanent or not. When you see through Vipassana meditation, when you see phenomena rise and fall, say you take one object as the object of meditation and it disappears, and then you take another, and so you see all things rise and fall, and so when you see things rising and falling, continuously, then you get the sense of the being oppressed by rise and fall. That being oppressed by rise and fall, continuously oppressed by rise and fall, is the mark of being dukkha. That is why everything conditioned is called dukkha, right? Five aggregates of clinging are dukkha. So according to this definition, sukha vedana is also dukkha. Somanasa is also dukkha. So we must understand that. It is dukkha not because it is painful, but it is impermanent. It is oppressed by rise and fall, because somanasa comes and then goes. So somanasa is also dukkha. The characteristic of non-self, anatta, is the mode of being insusceptible to the exercise of mastery. That means you cannot have control over it. It will not allow anybody to control it. So it arises and it disappears by its own free will. That is the fact that one cannot exercise complete control over the phenomena of mind and matter. So this is one meaning of anatta. But there are other meanings of anatta. not Ada, right? No, non-soul, not Ada. That is one meaning. And then there is another meaning, and that is having no core, heart substance. Because things are impermanent, rise and fall, and so they have no inner core. But here, the having no control over it is as described as a mark of non-self or mark of another. So these are the three characteristics. And these three characteristics will be discovered by those who practice vipassana meditation. So we don't have to deliberately try to find or try to see these characteristics. But as we go along with our meditation, and when we begin to see objects clearly, when we begin to see the objects come and go, then we discover the characteristic of impermanence. When characteristic of impermanence is seen, then characteristic of suffering is also seen. Because whatever is impermanent is suffering. And whatever is impermanent and suffering is no soul. So when you see impermanence, you see suffering, and you see non-self also. The three contemplations, contemplation of impermanence, contemplation of suffering, and the contemplation of non-self. That means when you see the impermanence, then that is the contemplation of impermanence. When you see the suffering nature, then the contemplation of suffering. And when you see non-self nature, then it is the contemplation of non-self. So they will be explained later. And then the 10 insight knowledges. There are more than 10, actually. But here, only 10 are mentioned. So these 10 are: 1, knowledge of comprehension. That means actually a knowledge of anicca, dukkha, and anatta of nama and rupa. 2, knowledge of rise and fall of formations. 3, knowledge of the dissolution of formations. 4, knowledge of dissolving things as fearful. That means seeing phenomena as fearful, dangerous. And 5, knowledge of fearful things as, dangerous. In Burmese, we do not translate the adinawa as danger. We translate adinawa as faults. So you find faults with mental and physical phenomena. You see faults. And 6, knowledge of disenchantment with all formations. That means you become dispassionate towards these phenomena. And 7, knowledge of desire for deliverance. So when you become disenchanted, when you become dispassionate, then you have the desire for deliverance. You want to get out of it. And 8, knowledge of reflecting contemplation. That means in order to gain deliverance, you have to make further effort. And then the 9th is knowledge of equanimity towards formations. And that is the highest form of vipassana knowledge. So during that stage, equanimity towards formations means you don't have to make effort to be mindful. You don't have to make effort to see the characteristics. So they just present the objects, just present themselves to you, and your understanding or your noting just arises. So you don't have to make effort. That is what is called equanimity towards formations. And then 10th is knowledge of conformity. Here, knowledge of conformity means knowledge during the moments of parikama, upacara, anuloma. And then the three emancipations, they are the void emancipation, signless emancipation, and desireless emancipation. You already are familiar with these three, right? Sunyata, animita, and apanihita. Where did you find them? In connection with what? Sunyata, animita, apanihita. Sixth chapter. Nibbana. Right? Three kinds of Nibbana. So, void emancipation, signless emancipation, and desireless emancipation. Although the word is desireless, here we mean all mental defilements, raga, dosa, moha. Okay, the three doors to emancipation, that is contemplation of the void, contemplation of the signless, and contemplation of the desireless. So by way of contemplation of the void, you realize or you see the void. By way of contemplation of signlessness, you see the signless, see Nibbana. And by way of contemplation of the desirelessness, you see the desireless Nibbana. So these are called the doors to emancipation. So this is something like these categories will be explained in the course of the following exposition. So this is like a table of contents. Now the first purification of virtue, purification of sila. Actually, purification of sila is not yet vipassana. Before you practice vipassana, you have to purify your sila. And there are four kinds of purification of virtue. One, virtue regarding restraint according to the Patimokkha. You know Patimokkha? Rules for monks. Huh? Yeah. Two, virtue regarding restraint of the sense faculties. Three, virtue consisting in purity of livelihood. And four, virtue connected with the use of the requisites. Now, these are for monks. Lay people may not like it. Yeah? When Visuddhimagga explains sila, it explains for monks. Monk sila, no pancha, five silas, or no eight precepts or ten precepts found in Visuddhimagga. Because Visuddhimagga was written by a monk for monks. And so monks' virtue or monk sila was described there. So here also monk sila was given. So there are four kinds of silas monks have to keep. And they are, one is the real sila, the observance of the rules of Patimokkha. Number two is the restraint of the sense faculties. So I've talked about this many times. That means exercise of mindfulness in one's encounter with sense objects, not allowing the mind to come under the sway of attraction towards pleasant objects and repulsion towards unpleasant objects. Simply put, not allowing lobha and dosa to arise with regard to what you see, what you hear, and so on. So that is called restraint of the sense faculties. And three is purity of livelihood. Deals with the manner in which a bhikkhu acquires the necessities of life. He should not acquire his requisites in a manner unbecoming for a monk who is dedicated to purity and honesty. So a monk must get his necessities lawfully. And that means according to the Vinaya. And that means a monk must go out for his alms. Something like that. He must not try to acquire necessities of life or try to acquire whatever he wants by fortune-telling or by treating people, like a physician and so on. So these are called unlawful livelihood or bad livelihood for monks. So actually monks are not to resort to such means to get things. So the purity of livelihood of virtue means getting one's requisites in a manner becoming for a monk. And the fourth one is virtue connected with the use of the requisites. Means that the bhikkhu should use the four requisites after reflecting upon their proper purpose. So monks are trained to reflect or to make reflections whenever he uses robes, alms, food, lodging, and medicine. And there is a formula for each of these four requisites. And a newly ordained samanera or a newly ordained monk is first taught these reflections. Because it is said that if a monk makes use of these requisites without reflection, then he uses the requisites by debt. So he must make reflections whenever he uses ropes and so on. So these four are called purity of sila. When a monk keeps all these four pure, then his virtue or his sila is said to be pure, or he has accomplished the purification of virtue, the first stage of purification. What about lay people? In order to get purification of virtue, what must they do? Take precepts, right? Yeah. And how many precepts must they take? Yeah? Minimum of five, right? So they may take eight precepts or they may take 10 precepts. And there are two kinds of eight precepts. One is the regular one you take. And the other is called ajivatamaka. That means abstaining from three bodily misconduct, four verbal misconduct, and then unlawful livelihood. So these are called ajivatamaka. So the minimum requirement is to keep five precepts. So if you keep five precepts, your moral conduct is said to be pure, or you have accomplished the first stage of purification. And for lay people, it is not so difficult to achieve purity of moral conduct, because lay people just need to say make a resolution that say I will not break this rule in the future, and then take the rules and keep them. Then a lay person's purity of moral conduct is said to be accomplished. That means lay people do not need to be pure in their moral conduct for a long time before they practice meditation. And there are stories, I've told you these stories many times. A fisherman, Buddha went to a fisherman, and then he preached to him, and he became a Sotapanna, right? And there were two pickpockets. They went to pickpocket when Buddha was teaching, and one succeeded in picking a pocket, and the other got interested in the teachings, and then he became a Sotapanna. So for lay people, it is enough if their the moral conduct is purified just before the practicing meditation. And it is not so difficult for lay people to achieve the purity of sila. But for monks, it is not so easy. Because in the Patimokkha rules, there are different grades, or say the difference in gravity of the rules. There are some rules, minor rules, which can be absolved easily just by confession. But there are some rules to get free from them, you have to, a monk has to stay under probation for as long as he conceals his transgression. That means if he conceals for one day, he has to be on probation for one day. If he conceals for 1 month, then he has to be under probation for one month, and so on. And then at the end, when he was accepted back into the fold of Sangha, 20 monks are, at least 20 monks are needed. So for monks to achieve purification of virtue, is not so easy as for lay people. Whether you are a lay person or a monk, if you want to practice meditation, then you have to achieve this stage of purification first. And then the next one is purification of mind. There are two kinds of samadhi. Purification of mind consists of two kinds of concentration, namely excess concentration and absorption concentration. Now, the Pali Buddhist tradition recognizes two different approaches to the development of insight. That means there are two kinds of persons who practice meditation to reach enlightenment. The first one is called Samatha Yanika. Yana means vehicle, Samatha and Ika means having. So having Samatha as a vehicle. Such a person practices Samatha first and may get Upachara Samadhi or Appana Samadhi. That means may get Upachara Samadhi or Jhana. And then after that, taking the Upachara Samadhi or Jhana as object, he practices Vipassana meditation. So such a person is called a Samatha Yanika. Samatha Yanika does not mean that he practices Samatha only, but he uses Samatha as a vehicle to practice Vipassana and to gain enlightenment. So after he attains a jhana, he attains excess concentration or jhanas, then he practices vipassana on the jhanas or on the miscellaneous formations. Now the second one is called vipassanayanika. A person who has vipassana as a vehicle. Yes. This person does not practice samatha meditation at all. He just practices vipassana meditation. And as he goes along practicing vipassana meditation, he gains concentration. So that concentration can be called samatha, but not in a technical sense. So this person practices samatha first, vipassana first, and then gains concentration. So when he gains concentration, he penetrates into the true nature of things. And so, for a person who practices vipassana only, there is no upajara samadhi and no appana samadhi. For him, purification of mind means not upajara samadhi or appana samadhi. There is another kind of samadhi for him, and that is called momentary concentration, khanika samadhi. Momentary concentration is not mentioned here, as well as in the Visuddhimagga, when describing concentration. But we must understand that momentary concentration is included in the upajara samadhi. Because momentary concentration is not jhana samadhi, that is sure. But it can, it resembles upajara samadhi. Because when one gets upajara samadhi, one suppresses mental hindrances. And mind is concentrated. In the same way, when one gets khanika samadhi, momentary concentration, then mental hindrances are subdued, and his mind is concentrated on moment by moment on objects. So, with regard to upajara samadhi, the object is only one and the same object. Like when you practice jhana, you take the kasina as object, and so only one object. But with khanika samadhi, there are varieties of objects. At one moment, it may be your breath, and the next moment, it may be a sound, and the next moment, it may be your thoughts. So although there are different objects, there is always mindfulness of samadhi here, moment by moment samadhi. So that moment by moment samadhi is called momentary concentration. And this momentary concentration is as important as access samadhi. Because without access samadhi, there can be no absorption samadhi in samatha meditation. Here also, without khanika, without momentary concentration, there can be no understanding of the objects, no penetration into the nature of things. So, for vipassana meditators, purification of mind consists in the momentary concentration, not excess concentration and absorption concentration. And this momentary concentration is similar to excess concentration because it can subdue the mental hindrances, and it is concentrated on the object. And Vipassana Yanika is also called dry insight worker, Sukha Vipassaka. Dry means without jhanas. So, Sukha Vipassaka, a dry insight worker, because he develops insight without the moisture of the jhanas. Okay, so purification of mind means, for samatha meditation, purification of mind means upajara samadhi and apana samadhi. But for vipassana meditation, purification of mind means momentary samadhi. But since it is the section of vipassana, we can say for the vipassana meditation also, upajara samadhi and apana samadhi are purification of mind. That is for those who practices samatha meditation first and then turns to vipassana meditation. Or for samatha yanika meditators. So for samatha yanika meditators, upajara samadhi and apana samadhi are purification of mind. For vipassana yanika or sukha vipassaka meditators, momentary concentration is the purification of mind. Okay.